Michelle. Do you want to do that on another day? We can do it tomorrow.
Okay, let's do it tomorrow.
Okay, thank you guys. Have a lovely night.
Thank you all.
Bye, Michelle.
Bye,
Diane.
Good night.
Good to meet you, Michelle.
Nice to meet you, too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we jump into the show today, I'd like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And so now into the regular part of our show. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day here in the United States. And, you know, if you have been listening to KBOO at all throughout the rest of the day, you will no doubt have heard some great programming regarding, you know, the life and the legacy of Martin Luther King. For our part in that, on Labor Radio, we would like to discuss, you know, something more specific to our topic, which is his role in the labor movement. And so that is what we're going to be discussing today. And so, yeah, in our era right now, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is primarily remembered as a hero of the civil rights movement and a leading activist in the struggle for racial equality. However, a part too often left out of his story is that, by his own estimation, he was also unequivocally an activist in the struggle for labor rights and economic justice. Of course, just as King's legacy has since been tightly constrained by a political and cultural establishment that openly viewed him as a threat and an enemy in his own time, his outspoken beliefs about the discrimination and exploitation inherent within our economic system have been heavily redacted from our collective historical memory. For this episode, we'll be focusing on this era of his legacy and examining how his words and beliefs are still just as relevant today as they were more than half a century ago. At the time of his assassination on April 4th, 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. was in Memphis, Tennessee, for his second visit to support the city's striking sanitation workers, who were members of AFSCME. As John Nichols in The Nation wrote, King died while defending the right of public employees to organize labor unions and to fight for the preservation of public services. In a 1962 letter written to the Amalgamated Laundry Workers, he reiterated, as I've said many times and believe with all my heart, the coalition that can have the greatest impact in the struggle for human dignity here in America is that of black people and the forces of labor, because their fortunes are so closely intertwined. And in fact, in his most famous address, the I Have a Dream speech, that was in fact actually delivered at the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, which was an unprecedented historic event that explicitly linked the social and economic demands of the campaigners for civil rights and economic justice. And later, after observing the legal victories, won for civil rights and how they had not improved the material conditions of life for many African Americans, King began to sharply focus his efforts on winning victories for economic justice. In the year leading up to his death, Dr. King began organizing what he called the Poor People's Campaign. This campaign demanded economic and human rights for poor Americans of diverse backgrounds. Included within those demands was an economic bill of rights, styled after a similar proposal from FDR during the New Deal era, more than two decades earlier. The Bill of Rights asked for the federal government to prioritize helping the poor with a $30 billion anti-poverty package that included a commitment to full employment, a guaranteed annual income measure, and more low-income housing. The campaign presented their organized set of demands to Congress and to executive agencies. And following King's assassination, campaigners undertook the Poor People's March on Washington, setting up a 3,000-person protest camp on the Washington Mall, where they stayed for 6 weeks in the spring of 1968. King believed the campaign represented the second phase of the civil rights movement, stating, "We believe the highest patriotism demands the ending of the Vietnam War and the opening of a bloodless war to the final victory over racism and poverty." So this is just a bit of an insight into King's role as, you know, not only a fighter for civil rights and racial equality, but also as a unabashed supporter of labor rights and the right to unionize, which, you know, as I did mention before, like, that is something that is largely left out of his modern day legacy, at least, you know, when it gets whitewashed by, you know, corporations thanking, you know, MLK on MLK Day, or like politicians talking about it. But this is a very real and a very intense part of his legacy that, you know, it still rings true today, as we'll discuss later on. Like, the things he said, mm-hmm. you know, more than half a century ago are just as relevant today regarding labor rights and, of course, racial equality as well.
Yeah.
You know, King, not only did he speak out, you know, for civil rights, but he also came out, you know, after initially supporting President Johnson, he then came out, you know, recognized that the Vietnam War was, in fact, a waste of life and money and a atrocity, and he came out against that, saying instead that he believed the funds that were being spent on the war effort would be better utilized helping poor folks at home here in the United States. He also, Martin Luther King, also called unions the first and greatest anti-poverty program, and he famously asked, what good does it do to be able to eat at a lunch counter if you can't buy a hamburger? Which is, you know, that is, of course, obviously speaking specifically to segregation and, you know, segregated restaurants and everything at that time, but the sentiment still rings true today, where, you know, what good is it to have access to healthcare if you can't afford it? What good is it to have access to, you know, any number of services or technology if you cannot afford to use those things, if you cannot afford to buy them?
Yeah. And yeah. I think too, it's important to call out that I think labor unions, to be, you know, not dive into it, have a complicated history.
Yes.
With racial equality.
Absolutely.
So to look back to, and for, you know, Dr. King to recognize that, you know, the struggles of working people are going to raise up a lot of, like, black and brown people in this country is really important, because a lot of the people he's reaching out to probably less than, you know, 5 years ago were doing probably some things that he didn't like. So
yeah,
you know, for him to come out and say things like, you know, the labor movement doesn't diminish the nation, but strengthens it.
Yeah.
You know, and calling out a lot of people to, you know, who were attacking labor at the time, you know, basically calling them out to say, like, you're really not looking at history, because all of the things that we enjoy now are because of labor unions and things exactly. like that. And I think, too, it's really interesting that a lot of the same things that we talk about almost every month here on the show were big parts of the things that he was discussing, and, you know, tons of people at the time. And especially the right to work stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, he called that out. I believe he called it a false slogan.
Yeah.
Or different things like that. And he really saw it as a way to destroy the freedom of collective bargaining, right? And, you know, we talked about it a ton today. But, you know, just as he said before, basically our weapon is our vote.
Yeah.
And right to work is a huge impediment to that. And all of the work that he did and other people did and throughout then, since then, it's still kind of a fight that we're trying to work on, because there's still lots of confusion and, I think, misunderstanding of the law today and how it affects people.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, one of the big things, like just exactly what you were saying, is that, you know, there's a thread throughout American history where we, at least, you know, in the late 20th century and now in the 21st century, we do seem to have memory hold largely the role that labor and the organizing of working people has played in, like, winning progressive victories in this country, you know, and, like, in just shaping the society we live in today. Obviously, you know, the weekend, you know, the 5-day work week and giving 2 days off over the weekend, like, that is a victory won by, you know, bloody struggles for labor rights. And that, of course, is something that we take for granted, we don't even fully recognize today. But King, in his era, was calling that out. And, you know, exactly as Elliot just said, you know, he recognized the...
And kind of data-driven.
Yeah.
Look back at a lot of his a lot of his speeches, and he talks about how everywhere where you see right-to-work laws, wages are lower, job opportunities are fewer, and there are less civil rights.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the early thing where we, you know, now we're so focused on it, but just kind of peeking around and, like, trying to actually accurately describe the situation as it's occurring, because I think a lot of people just had their head in the sand.
Yeah.
And realizing, hey, when we have these things, you know, the people are able to collectively bargain or get together and understand the things that they need in order to be successful.
Yeah. And it's not unsurprising, you know, King being, you know, coming out of the American South, that, you know, speaking out against, you know, lack of ability to organize and things like right to work, like, those threads continue to exist. You know, obviously they've spread throughout the country, but, like, the concept of really fighting against labor and, the, you know, the ability to organize, like, labor had definitely taken hold in the North in this country a lot stronger than it had in the South. And so, of course, things like right to work would be very prevalent in the environment that King was operating in and was growing up in and you know, observing the world in. Those, you know, that still, of course, labor definitely has a lot of struggling in the South in this country too, to this day.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, since Dr. King's assassination, you know, labor has basically fallen a lot from the highs that it kind of had in the 60s. But I don't necessarily think you can attribute all of that to, you know, his assassination, because obviously the ways that we work is really different, and people are trying to, you know, get laws removed and all these things. But I do think it's really important to kind of note the huge fall off, you know, after his presence was gone, because it was a huge important talking point.
Yeah.
And a huge part of the movement, like you said, the Poor People's Campaign.
Yeah, I mean,
that was all really important work that, you know, was continued on, obviously, but with less, you know.
Right. Like, I mean, the reverence that people had, you know, at least in the activist community, or in, you know, the more liberal and left-wing community in this country for King, you know, I think had he lived to really carry out the Poor People's March on Washington, and had that struggle continued for, you know, decades, or, you know, like, if that movement had continued to grow under his leadership, it is you know, amazing to think where that could have been today, like what that could have accomplished in bringing together not only, you know, African Americans and allies to support, you know, the cause for civil rights, but then also branching or sort of growing that to just poor people of all diverse backgrounds in this country, recognizing their common cause of, you know, basically they are all exploited workers regardless of race or ethnicity or gender. And it really, you know, that's sort of the linkage that he was starting to make, that I think has taken us, since that era, it has taken us a long time to kind of rediscover that. And I think in this new civil rights era that we are living in now, it is definitely a topic that is being rediscovered and reinvigorated. But it is just really interesting to see like a lot of the things that he has said, and we will pull out a few quotes from him here. But like a lot of things that he was saying, you know, 60 years ago are just as relevant today, and we are sort of just rediscovering these same basic concepts that he was very keen on, you know, back in, you know, the middle of the 20th century. And so, you know, in a certain way, it's really positive to see, like, wow, he was speaking the same language we are, you know, speaking towards the same issues we're seeing today. But on another way, it is kind of a little bit demoralizing to see, like, wow, we have not grown as a country. You know, we have not dealt with these issues that were very clearly called out, you know, generations ago, and we have still just refused to deal with them. And so they are, to some degree, like, those are intractable issues within our society that need to be fought against constantly. You know, like, one of the most famously quoted King quotes, there's, you know, speeches, is he says, you know, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And it's, I think that this is a good example of that. Like, this is a long struggle. A struggle for these labor rights has existed throughout the entirety of capitalism, throughout the entirety of this country, and it has bent towards justice, but it is still arcing. It is still a long journey ahead. So we have absolutely seen victories on this front, but you know, we still are, you know, with the emergence of the gig economy and Prop 2022, as we've discussed, like, these things are still just as big of struggles as they are, you know, now as they were then. And so, yeah, like, it is heartening to see someone as such a hero of our collective historical past echoing our similar sentiments, but the fact that it is so far into the future and it's the same idea.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I totally see what you're saying. I mean, I think, you know, for me, a lot of the stuff that MLK is talking about is, you know, even back then, right, like, the rights of workers were obviously super important, but there was at least this path. There was this path to collective bargaining, and there were pensions, and there was this way for you to at least generate some sort of at least lifestyle for you and your family.
Yes.
And I think now it's really important to kind of call out, like you said, the gig economy for what it is.
Yep.
And that is that it is, you are less mobile. It is even more so disproportionately affecting Black and brown people.
Yep.
And it is causing probably, like, you know, instead of having this one job and you're working towards this pension, you have four.
Yeah.
And they all are not paying you properly or giving you rights. And, you know, you're owning a car that's getting depreciated and you're trying to understand your taxes. Like, so in some ways, you know, things are even more difficult. And so I think for us, it's going to be really important over the next couple years to make sure that society and workers and labor are all keeping their eye on, you know, maybe it's not coming for me right now, but who can get turned into a contractor. It's kind of the modern day, hey, we need to be identified here as workers because that's what we're doing.
Absolutely. Like, that is I think you nailed it right there. Like, the coming struggle for the labor movement is going to be exactly what Prop 22, you know, set the groundwork for, which is reclassifying workers across, not just in the gig economy, but across our, you know, industrial lines, like across our economy, reclassifying them, you know, moving them out of the realm of employees where they have to pay them, you know, provide benefits and all that stuff, and moving them into contracted workers. More workers are going to be, as we, you know, as the economy reshapes following, you know, the pandemic and everything, I think that we are going to see a lot of jobs lost in the employee sector, and a lot of growth in the contract worker sector across industries.
Yeah, I mean, and it's pretty similar to, like, in the 90s too, and, like, maybe late 80s when, you know, pensions were starting to be removed in favor of 401ks.
Yep.
And the pitch was freedom of movement, right? And it's very similar. That's how the gig economy is being pitched, is, you know, hey, you're not going to do this for a long time. And, you know, we see that's just not true. The same way fast food industry said, you know, hey, it's for 15-year-olds to do, but then you look and it's, you know, single mothers or single fathers and people who are there for, you know, 25, 30 years. And so I think it's just going to be really important for us to continually fight for the rights of everyone who's a part of the labor movement, which is almost everybody.
Yeah.
And make sure that, you know, things like that don't sneak through.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like you just said, you know, there is a difference there between, you know, the freedom to versus the freedom from. And I think you know, like yes, the gig economy, or you know, the removing of pensions and all those, all the things that have been done to undermine the power of labor in this country over the last century or last half century, a lot of them are packaged as like, look, you have the freedom to do these things. Yeah. But what they are not saying is that actually you are, we are removing your freedom from not having these, you know. So like, you have the freedom to choose how you invest your retirement funds, but what that really means is now you are, they're removing your freedom from having to worry about being, you know, never able to retire, or getting to retirement age and having no, you know, no savings saved for yourself or anything like that.
Yeah.
And so I think that that is, you know, it's all about how it is packaged and how it is presented to us. But you know, again, these things that we are discussing right now were just as prevalent in King's era, and he did call those out. Those same types of, like, you know, the how you present the argument, and how these things are, you know, presented to the American people, and how they are confusing. Those are things that were just as relevant then as they are now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. And I think it's important to focus on the confusing nature of it, because, you know, a company like Delta is going to come out and say, yeah, well, this is a day we have off and we respect his values.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, you know, like 2-3 years ago, they had that basically poster up in their like employee section of a couple airports where it was like, right. Wow, yeah. $300, that's a lot for dues. Like, you might as well buy an Xbox, right? And so like, it's similarly like, it's now just, hey, how can we make a nice social tweet?
Yep.
But then also like undermine you, and also kind of just not respect your intelligence just as a human, right?
Right.
Hey, you know, union dues, that sounds bad. Like, you'd rather buy an Xbox. I mean, it's a really... It, just from a messaging standpoint, it doesn't really respect the reader too much, and obviously it's design, it's propaganda, so it's kind of inherent to it. But I think it's just important to kind of really remember like what's going on and how to spend your time. And I think you know, us here at Labor Radio, at least on this show, you know, as COVID gets away, seeing how you can be involved in your community a little bit more. Obviously, it's really tough right now, but you know, we've been talking about it, and you know, when things clear up, how can we get involved and help people and really, you know, use the time that you get off, not to just, you know, let some corporation tweet at you, but just, you know, use it and help. And I think that's a little bit more of the point.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not allowing the corporations to, you know, especially, you know, if we're speaking about this day in particular, Martin Luther King Day, like not allowing the employers and those, you know, those powers of capital to woke wash this day and to you know, wash themselves of any you know, role they have in perpetuating the things that King was fighting against by simply throwing out a quote about peace and unity that they pulled out of a history book, you know, things like that, of like, you know, saying like, hey, we honor you know, Martin Luther King's legacy by, you know, having this sale on this day, you know, those types of things, like not allowing them to get away with not reckoning with their role in perpetuating the exact same discriminations and the exact same exploitations that King fought so fervently against. And so, you know, just to sort of really hammer this point home, there's a quote that I'd like to read here from Dr. King. It was a speech given to the Illinois State AFL-CIO on October 7th, 1965. And in that speech, Dr. King said that at the turn of the century, the average work week was 60 to 70 hours. During the 30s, wages were a secondary issue. To have a job at all was the difference between the agony of starvation and a flicker of a life. The labor movement was the principal force that transformed misery and despair into hope and progress. Out of its bold struggles, economic and social reform gave birth to unemployment insurance, old age pensions, government relief for the destitute, and above all, new wage levels that meant not mere survival, but a tolerable life. The captains of industry did not lead this transformation. They resisted it until they were overcome. When in the 30s, the wave of union organizing crested over the nation, it carried to secure shores not only itself, but the whole society. Civilization began to grow in the economic life of men, and a decent life with a sense of security and dignity became a reality rather than a distant dream. It is a mark of our intellectual backwardness that these monumental achievements of labor are still only dimly seen, and in all too many circles the term union is still synonymous with self-seeking, power-hungry racketeering and cynical coercion. There have been and still are wrongs in the trade union movement, but its share of credit for triumphant accomplishments is substantially denied in the historical treatment of the nation's progress. So basically all of that to say that all of the, you know, exactly like we said earlier, like so much of the social progress we have, and you know, at least around, you know, working life, which is where you spend so much of your time, is thanks to the struggle of working people organizing and making demands of capital. And the fact that we as a society still don't fully understand that reality, and we still allow ourselves to be propagandized by the people in the ownership class, like the people in charge of these positions, who absolutely fought against these things, these progresses, tooth and nail, in throughout all eras of history. You know, the fact that we still recognize their role in granting these things to us more than we recognize the role that labor played and actually, like, working people played in securing those and fighting for those things, it just really does, as he said, it's a mark of our intellectual backwardness. And you know, he discusses here that, like, that, you know, he talks about the things that make life worth living and that make a decent life, and he calls out specifically living wages and a basic social safety net. You know, those are things that were fought for and people bled for in the labor movement that would not have been granted had people not struggled for it. And so just the fact that in, you know, this was 1965, King was calling that out then, speaking about the first half of the 20th century, and we are now beyond the second half of the 20th century, and those things are still just as relevant, is, you know, it's kind of, it's heartening and demoralizing at the same time. But, you know, again, the moral arc of the universe is bending towards justice, and we are recognizing that once again in this era. You know, again, as you said, he spoke out against right to work laws, and you know, those things are just still as relevant today as they were 60 years ago. And so at this moment, I'd like to just take a quick break and introduce anyone who is just tuning in right now. Thank you for joining us. This is Labor Radio. On this Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we are discussing the life and legacy of Dr. King and his role in promoting and supporting the labor movement, and his views on labor and how those beliefs are still just as relevant today as they were more than half a century ago. And so now, just to bring this full circle, this last week on Friday, January 15th, which is MLK's actual birthday, more than 1,000 fast food workers around the country walked out on strike, protesting low wages and persisting inadequate health precautions amid the COVID-19 pandemic. So these are workers from several major fast food chains demonstrating in about 15 cities around the country. Fast food employees make up a large chunk of the essential workers who've continued to go into work while many other Americans work from home. And this was organized by the labor advocacy group Fight for 15 in a Union. And the organization's organizing director said, "Raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour is among the most powerful tools to lift up black and brown workers. This movement really comes down to a change and a realization of the value of work. It is a recognition that is well beyond time to make sure that this happens." And so that is something that King talked largely about, or talked often about, which is like the realization that, like, all work has dignity, and the value that any work anyone is undertaking, as long as it does benefit, you know, humanity, is dignified work, regardless of how it is viewed by our society and how it's compensated. And that's something that I think, you know, this pandemic has really brought into the fore, is our understanding of, like, who do we value? Yeah, like, who are essential workers?
Yeah.
And people who are part of our food infrastructure are very much more essential workers than anyone who, you know, most anyone who is able to take this time and work from home or anything like that, you know, myself included, unfortunately. But that, you know, so I think that this is just something that we're still struggling to compensate these people fairly and to recognize the value they have in our society, even amid this raging pandemic. This is something that fully, you know, this is something that King talked about largely, you know, during his time, and we are still dealing with it today. You know, that same organizing employee said that fast food companies that support King's legacy and want to continue his fight against institutional racism can start by increasing their workers' pay and letting them unionize, which is something that King himself, of course, argued for.
Yeah.
You know.
And they're in more danger now than they've ever been.
Exactly.
You know, not to dive too deep into it, but right, like, the government and OSHA and the Trump administration aren't really cracking down on tons of just really poor conditions for workers. So not only were they already being mistreated, but you throw on top of that a pandemic, a of kind of epic proportions and basically no response to it.
Yeah. You know, just to really highlight exactly what you just said, there was an LA Times article that cited OSHA complaints and found that like the fast food industry specifically has really been a hotbed for outbreaks, and that there have been something like 1,600 complaints to OSHA concerning COVID-related safety issues. And yet there have been, and then like 200 additional issues that were brought up in lawsuits. But of those things, there have OSHA inspectors have only visited 54 fast food establishments. And there are nearly 600 cases that remain open. 1,000 have just been closed without any inspection. And at this point, only 3 fast food restaurants have been cited for OSHA violations nationwide. 3. And that is, you know, in response to 1,600 COVID-related complaints. So these are issues, of course, you know, we're going to have to leave it here because we're out of time. But these issues that King spoke about 60 years ago are still very relevant today. And just to close it out, Dr. King's legacy, or Dr. King's call for labor rights, economic fairness, and racial justice rings as true today as it ever did. And so that is, you know, that's our message. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will be back with you again next month. And, you know, for Labor Radio, I'm Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. To honor Martin Luther King Jr., here are excerpts from A Letter from a Birmingham Jail.
And I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
To Alabama Governor George Wallace, the continuation of segregation was a solemn promise. To Martin